Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
508. Laura, you and I both saw movies, right?
We did this weekend, yes.
You saw Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes.
And what did you think?
I thought it was mind-blowing. I can't even really describe it. I mean, it is not a movie for a linear thinker or somebody who needs everything to make sense for them, because it's very out there, and it's so cool. I mean, I can't even really tell you the story, but once you kind of get the gist of what's going on, you see all of these themes of love emerging from this. A mother's love for her kid, acceptance. It's just wonderful. It was so powerful to me, and the longer I watched it, the more I loved it and didn't want it to end. How about you? What did you watch?
So the first time I saw that movie.
Yes.
At first, I didn't like it.
Right.
And then as I watched it, I'm like, this is really interesting.
Me too.
And really weird.
Yes.
It's very weird.
It's very weird.
So this is, and then at the end of watching it, I was like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 days later, I was like, I really like that movie.
That was really
It was one of those, like, if you like a big blockbuster kind of movie, you will hate this.
Yes. Yeah. This is not a
typical
movie.
It's really weird.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
It's art. It's just like a bonanza, a kaleidoscope of art coming at you full steam for 2 hours.
The performances were incredible.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, right away. You're like, wow. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis is in it as a sort of a bad guy in the movie.
Yeah. Yep.
But Michelle Yeoh, just very, very good. Very good.
It's one of those that you kind of need to see more than once to really catch.
I felt that way, too. Like, I need to see it again.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I saw the opposite of that this weekend, Avatar.
Oh, excellent. How was that?
So my kids, for my birthday, gave me, they're like, we're going to take you to Avatar, because we all watched the first Avatar at home. Like, we streamed it.
Yes.
Getting ready to watch it.
Fun.
And as you remember, like when you have a couple teenagers, it's really hard to get on the same schedule as anybody.
For sure. Yep.
So Sunday night just works. So last night we went off to the Mann Theater in Champlin.
Good.
Where we were 50% of the crowd in the giant theater are the four of us. Not a huge Sunday night at the movies.
It's not a big hot night for movie going,
I guess,
is it?
Not. Although I sort of wish that I had discovered this in the past.
Yeah.
Because it was great going to the movie with Seth and Sam.
Yes.
It was just nice.
Good.
It was very nice.
Good.
Avatar is a spectacle.
Wow.
Just amazing.
Was this
visually
in 3D?
Amazing. We didn't do the 3D.
Okay.
It was it was in their largest theater, like not their 3D. Or there's another thing, right? Like there's XD. Am I making that up?
Something
there's
like that.
Super duper screen.
It's coming out of the walls all around you. Yes.
Yes. But it was just fun to have the movie theater sound. Like, I really like sound design and hearing the speakers, and It was very nice. The one thing that was sort of weird, and did you see your movie in the theater or at home?
No, at home.
Oh, you streamed it, yeah, because of the SAG-AFTRA.
Right,
yeah. So they sent us it. We're in the, when you see the SAG Awards, and just think of me and Dan and Laura. We're the,
because we're voting members.
Who else to decide what the best movies are? It's fine. It's fine.
My line every time I tell people that I'm technically a member of SAG is that I'm union brothers with George Clooney.
Yeah.
He doesn't know that.
No, he does not.
He doesn't know that, but I do.
Yeah.
And that's really all that matters.
How much power do we have in this vote? I hope
very little.
Correct.
Well, Kate Blanchett called me the other day, and she wanted to come over and watch Tar with me.
With you?
Yes, just to kind of see what I think ahead of my vote.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. Avatar was amazing.
Good. I do need to see that, and I will see that with my kid. I love watching movies and going to movies with my son right now because he's really into the just the artistry of filmmaking.
Oh, like, cool.
And I just think it's so great that he loves this stuff and he's aware of things and is interested in it.
My oldest is really into it, too. And Avatar, a lot of it takes place underwater.
Yep.
And so Seth had read all about it, and Avatar is sort of becoming another, so Disney bought it, and it's becoming another, like, you know, Star Wars type film or Marvel type film. Where there are going to be a number of sequels, and so the movie's 3 hours long.
That's long.
It's long, but it didn't. I honestly, like, it may be because we saw it. You know, it's been out for 4 weeks now or so. Like, there weren't a lot of previews or anything, so it sort of got into it right away. In fact, the lights were turned down, but they weren't like off. Which
really?
I don't know if that is. I feel like I haven't gone to a lot of movies in the theater lately.
Maybe somebody forgot to turn them all the way on.
Well, I think that's possible, but it's also possible that maybe they don't turn the lights as low as they. I don't know. Is it a safety? I don't know.
I don't know either.
Maybe it was just a screw up.
Could be
possible.
Sunday night.
It's probably it's probably the B team working on it.
Right.
Just saying. No offense to the fine folks who are out there, but. Seth knew like all the other stuff. Like, oh, my wife was saying there was a scene that sort of she didn't see the importance of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Seth was like, well,
let me tell you.
So it's interesting. Like, as a kid, sequels were not really a thing, right? I mean, the Star Wars movies you had.
Yes.
But outside of that, like, you'd occasionally get a sequel, but it wasn't like, this character has 14 layers to them, which will be unveiled in the next three films.
It wasn't like a franchise.
It's
really.
Sort of the franchise. It's different, right, Dan? I know you love those kind of movies, right?
I do, and that was exactly the word that I was going to
say. The franchise.
Laura beat me to it. Yeah, it's that idea of the multiple tentacles of this whole thing and how it's all interconnected.
Do you like that?
I love it. Because you mentioned, you know, you said when we were kids there weren't, because you and I are about the same age.
Right.
When we were kids there wasn't franchise, there wasn't the sequels. Empire Strikes Back was the first movie I ever saw in the theaters.
Hmm.
And from that moment,
really?
Anything Star Wars I was going to be in on.
Well, you saw the right one to see first.
Exactly. It totally did. And it just, the fact that there were layers to that story that you go back and, eight, 9 years old at the time, whatever it was. You know, you watch that movie, I'm all jazzed about that movie, and then somebody comes along and tells you, well, there's another movie that comes before that movie, and I got to go back and watch that one and see how it was connected, and it just, you know, sparked my imagination in amazing ways. And so when you watch something like the Marvel movies, and they've got, you know, over 20 films, and you see all of the ways that there have threads.
They're all tied together.
Yeah.
It's just, it's incredible that anybody can sit there and see that big picture and go, okay, here's how this is all going to work.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
You sort of wonder that, like with Avatar. Also, these characters, like, it was sort of a surprising. James Cameron has said in interviews that the bad guy is going to be the bad guy. So they're not, he doesn't want to turn good guy characters and have, okay, now for the sequel,
the good guy's going to be the bad guy.
You see this in the, I forget which Netflix, Ted Lasso. It looks like in Ted Lasso that the one coach. Why?
Yeah.
I'm blanking,
yes, I know.
Right.
Who you're
like he's going to become a bad guy.
It's already started. Yep.
And so I don't love that.
I don't either.
Don't take the person I like and make me hate them. Mm-hmm. Like I don't like that.
Yeah, it's kind of like what's the Marvel movie with the brother Captain America and his brother is bad. Dan, what's the brother's name?
Well, it's Bucky was not his brother. It was his friend growing up.
Oh, that's right.
And then, you know, gets captured by the Russians and experimented on and then he gets his brain twisted around. So then he's a bad guy, but now he's a good guy.
Now he's good again. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then there's Loki and Thor too.
And Loki's a fascinating character in that he's the bad guy that you kind of do want to root for a little bit.
Yes.
Because there's this charm and wit to him. And then in the series, and so then they have the movie version, and now there's the Disney Plus series that they have of him. There's a second season coming of that delves into this character, and you see all the layers to the character, and it's just incredible storytelling.
Wow.
So the texters are saying that there were plenty of franchises back in the day. Rocky.
Yes,
but Rocky, here's the difference. Rocky 1 came out in 1976, and then Rocky 2 was in short order, 1979. I was 4. I did not see either of those films. But then there was a little more. It was 82, 85. So it was like every 3 to 5 years you got another Rocky film. With these franchises, with like certainly with the Marvel, it's a different rate where you're getting a couple a year.
3-4 a year when it comes to Marvel, yeah.
And so it to me, it's different. Maybe I just, I wasn't into those movies.
Yeah.
So like I did Rambo, Rocky.
Look, Rocky IV solved the Cold War. So
I wasn't allowed.
If you're not into that, I don't.
I wasn't allowed to watch this stuff. Like my household was very strict with movie ratings. So like PG-13 when that, well, first.
You were well over 13 when that became a thing.
Right. PG-R. I wasn't allowed to see an R-rated movie. I wasn't allowed to watch MTV.
Mm.
Only allowed to watch Remote Control, the game show. I was allowed to watch that.
On MTV?
Yeah. But none of that smut.
Oh, yes.
And, yeah, that was all I... It was.
Do you want to know a funny story about a memorable movie for me? And I think I must have been 12 or 13 or maybe even slightly younger. Whenever Grease came out, and I don't know what year that would have come out. Late 70s, early, very early 80s, but I'm guessing it was the late 70s.
78 was the first movie, yeah.
So I got to go to Greece with my sister and my mom and my dad, and I was so excited. I was just so excited, and I thought it was the coolest thing I had ever, ever seen in my life because I love the music and the singing and the dancing and the characters and the bright colors and everything like that. I loved it so much that I just, like, bawled my head off because I wanted to be in the movie so badly.
Right.
And I will never forget that. That's like one of my big, big movie memories was Grease and crying at Grease because I loved it so much.
Were you more like Sandy or Rizzo? Like,
I think I'm sure I was more like Sandy, but I probably wanted to be a little bit like Rizzo. Who doesn't?
Exactly.
She has all the fun.
Absolutely. Jeez. Absolutely right. I was more like Sandy too. Let's be honest.
Were you?
Yeah.
Oh, no, weren't fine. You were what was John Danny?
Danny.
Danny Zuko.
I was not Danny.
You were not Danny. You were Kanicki. You are Kanicki.
I was Kanicki. Wow.
That's Grease Lightning, baby.
That's more accurate than I care to admit. It's true. It's true. All right, good stuff. Go see a movie. Like it was fun to be sitting in a theater and have movie theater popcorn. And
yep, that's the best.
That was good. Thanks, Laura.
Yep.
It's 5:20. Quick break. Come back with the Do You Rush Hour news headlines in just a minute here on CCO. Instead of the traditional Do You Rush Hour news headlines, Dan Cook is going to break down the 2023 WWE Royal Rumble.
Do you want me to start with the men's or the women's version?
Well, I mean, I know I'm a Brock Lesnar fan, so.
He had an interesting outing. You know, he got in there, got three quick eliminations, but he was only in the match for like 3 minutes.
Right.
Talk about effective use of your time.
Don't I know it. Don't I know it. But we're all very excited for Cody Rhodes.
It's going to be fun.
The winner of the Royal Rumble.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
WrestleMania 29. Okay, we're not doing that at all, but just wanted to give you a glimpse into what life is like here in the studio at 5:30 every day. Let's talk about this. Jobs in the Twin Cities that are now $100,000 a year jobs, six-figure jobs. Before the pandemic, they were not. After the pandemic, they are. Vets, actuaries, college social science instructors. Three of the 15 occupations that now are a 100 a year, which I say good for you. I think everybody should make $100,000 a year, including everybody in this building. This is federal salary data that the business journals analyzed as published in the Minneapolis St. Paul Business Journal. Tight labor market, more turnover, fueling significant raises in bonuses. When I looked at these numbers, some of the jobs that jumped the most, and these are all 100,000 or more average salaries, health and safety engineers, physicists, food scientists, and computer systems analysts. All of these jobs Yeah. Sorry, journalism and English majors. STEM. A lot of science and math in there. At the urging of St. Paul's Mayor Melvin Carter, St. Paul City Council poised to add up to $2 million next month, expanding a three-year-old fund to promote home buying. Pioneer Press, Fred Mello with this story about the newly reorganized inheritance fund, that's what they call it, makes it easier for people to qualify for the money. It drops purchase price limits and adds money for first-generation home buyers, especially people who are displaced from the Rondo neighborhood and their descendants. So if you're a Rondo family who got pushed out for the construction of Interstate 94 and you buy a home within the boundary of that Rondo neighborhood, what remains? Big money there. Between $40,000 and $110,000. And if you stay in that property for 15 years, the loan is forgiven. How about that? So great opportunity to rebuild a neighborhood that was really destroyed by the interstate highway. 600 to 700 people lost their homes to build that freeway. And those, it's a lot of grandparents or great-grandparents of people who are still in St. Paul. So who knows how many people will take advantage of it. But you think if five? Huge opportunity to create a resource there for those families. Should you be nervous if you look at a label and you see potassium sorbate or benzoic acid? Star Tribune breaking down some of the most common ingredients on food labels because we don't know what the heck this stuff is, right? Potassium sorbate is a preservative. It's metabolized into water and carbon dioxide, according to the story. So it's no big deal. It doesn't accumulate in the body. Potassium benzoate. That's naturally occurs in cranberries. You see that if you look at a soda label, see that in there, preservative. Lots of acids like citric acid, sorbic, lactic, benzoic, propionic. You're like, why is there acid in my food? But lemon juice is an acid, and it keeps unwanted organisms away, so that's good. Really interesting article. Check it out on the Star Tribune because lots of different things I didn't know what it was. You read it on a label, and you're like, huh? The maker of Fireball has been sued for fraud for selling. Well, you've probably seen this at the gas station counter. And it looks like Fireball, looks like it should have whiskey in it, except there's no whiskey in it. Fireball cinnamon. It's in like one of those little shorty glass bottles. And I always thought it was Fireball, but I never took a second to think, how are they selling Fireball at a gas station? Has lower alcohol content. Can be sold at grocery stores and gas stations all over the country. You see it more in Wisconsin, where it's legal to sell beer at gas stations. It's a malt beverage with whiskey flavorings. Sazerac is a company that's being sued for this. The label says it's a malt-based beverage. It's called Fireball Cinnamon, not Fireball. But there's a lawsuit. And the plaintiff is a Chicago woman, Anna Marquez, who says she bought Fireball Cinnamon unaware. And so what is the justice she deserves for this injustice? $5 million is what you get that money, Anna. You get that money. $5 million. Whoa. But it does look just like Fireball, so it'll be interesting how this all shakes out. That is the DeRush out. Plus, why are you drinking Fireball? I mean, unless you're ice fishing, where a Fireball is an appropriate beverage, for sure, in an ice fish house. That's the D-Rush Hour News headlines. We are going to talk with Joe Tamburino in just a minute. So many questions about what's going on in Memphis. Firefighters just fired this afternoon. So many police officers, firefighters fired. We'll talk about the legal case here with Joe Tamburino next.
baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
In Memphis today, three fire department workers fired, two more Memphis officers relieved of duty. So a total of seven officers were relieved of duty. Five have been fired. As you know, those five have been charged. Two are on administrative leave. Joe Tamburino and I covered the trial of Derek Chauvin here in the Twin Cities. He joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Joe, nice to have you with us today.
How you doing, Jason? Thanks for having me on.
Did Memphis do this right as far as disciplining officers immediately afterwards, taking action relatively quickly?
Yes, it appears that they have. I think what they've done is they've learned from situations before, such as the George Floyd situation with Mr. Chauvin and the other former officers. And they quickly went through this. They quickly released as much as they could of the body-worn camera videos. I know that some of it has been redacted, but they released to the public everything that the Nichols family had seen. And they quickly fired these police officers and then got indictments on them.
Is this the way that this is going to go now? I mean, not long ago, you know, Derek Chauvin was fired the day after George Floyd was killed. But that was sort of an unusually quick disciplinary action.
Right. It was very quick with the Chauvin situation. But I think where we have these body-worn camera videos and other videos, you know, like the poll camera videos or, say, business commercial videos, which pretty much shows the whole situation. As soon as you have the higher-ups in that police department review it, they're going to be able to make a determination as to whether or not excessive force was used. Some situations you may not know. The video may not show everything, or it could be a close call, meaning that the officers really used the amount of force that was necessary at the time. But in something like this, where we have just gratuitous violence, where the officers are, you know, for no reason, punching, kicking, clubbing Mr. Nichols while he was on the ground, while he's handcuffed. I mean, with something like that, it is exactly what you see.
Joe Tamburino is a criminal defense attorney, legal analyst with us, talking about Tyre Nichols, developments coming out still today. You know, Joe, I want to ask about the video, because in these sorts of incidents, there is video. I'm sort of amazed at the volume of video, because in Memphis, it was that overhead camera on a pole that really gave you the image of how devastatingly unnecessary this beating was. Are these cameras everywhere? I mean, that video actually gave us a more clear idea of what was going on than even the officers' cameras themselves.
That's correct. I mean, in today's world, cities, even our city, we have dozens of cameras that are around downtown. Some are police cameras, some are through the downtown council, and some are commercially owned. But all of these, usually with the police, have access to them. So in today's world, if you're in, you know, certain areas of town or downtown, you're likely going to be videoed. And it's completely legal, because when you enter the public realm, when you walk on a street, on a sidewalk, anybody could take a picture of you.
Yeah.
That's why you see people taking pictures of Hollywood stars as they're walking to or from a restaurant or bar. It's completely legal.
Question about the video release, because Tyre Nichols, the beating happened on January 7th. He died on January 10th. The video is released on the 27th. That seems like a long time to me. Is it a long time? Is there a way we can get like a standard of saying, you know, if there's a critical incident with police, we will release the video to the public within 5 days, 3 days. It always, I feel, makes you skeptical as to what's going on when it takes so long for the video to come out.
I don't think that was released too late at all. I think that was speedily released. And here's why. When you have even a regular DUI arrest involving two or three officers, you might have 8 hours of body-worn camera video that you have to review, let alone five officers, EMTs, a couple of sheriff's deputies. It takes a while to go through all of those videos. Then you have to examine them under the rubric, under the examination of use of force, the use of force continuum. So this takes a while. And then you need expert advice. So to get all that done within a couple of weeks, the Memphis DA and police department did an exceptional job.
But why can't they just release it, though, and still be doing all of that stuff, still be doing all of that analysis, even if they don't release all of it, if they release the body-worn cameras or something? Because I feel like these incidents end up playing out in a similar way, where you have a couple of days of family members saying, just release the video, just release the video, and that... I wonder if you would have more trust if you could release it. And I do know, like, in the scheme of a massive investigation, yeah, like, you know, 2 weeks. Three weeks. Mm-hmm. It was 3 weeks about. Mm-hmm. That's pretty fast. Yeah. But in the scheme of our desire as a 24-hour news cycle and the desire of protesters and family, like, people, I think, expect it quicker than that, don't they?
They do, but there's a couple of important reasons why you just can't willy-nilly just release everything within 24 hours or 72 hours. One is you don't want to influence potential witnesses. You want to make sure that if there's a witness to a crime, that person tells you exactly what they experienced, what they saw, what they heard. If all of a sudden you're releasing all these videos, that witness might take those videos and imprint them on his or her own memory. And we don't want that to have an accurate investigation. Right. The second thing is, you don't know if you're trying to prevent certain people from not being recognized. Who would they be? There could be undercover informants. There could be undercover police. There could be children. There's a number of things that you just can't throw these videos out there.
Yeah, that in Memphis did a lot of blurring of faces and things like that while still releasing an unedited full view of what happened. I do understand that part of it. Yeah. It's tricky because, you know, like, it does take a lot of time and to obtain the video and all of that. I'm less concerned about the witness interview. I feel like you could get it done in a week. You could say, all right, 7 days. See, already, Joe, you've moved me from saying 3 days to five to seven. I'm a reasonable person. I can be convinced. But this is definitely, I think this is an area I guess I wish we didn't have these incidents, and then you wouldn't have as much of a calling for this. But the reality is these sorts of things do happen. Yeah.
Yes, they do. And what's going to happen is I think that most states, I mean, I hope our state legislature would do this, which is give police departments some parameters about when they could start releasing the videos. Mm. Because you're going to see the public want more and more, not only of police use of force videos, but other crime videos. Because someone who's been, say, the victim of a robbery or a carjacking is going to say, hey, wait a minute, why aren't my videos being released? Why can't the public see that? Why can't my neighbor see that? I want to see who did this to me. So I think what this is going to evolve into are new laws that say pretty much what you were saying, which is within a certain period of time, you have to release the video. Say it's 30 days. And then if the prosecutor or the police agency needs more time to go through it or doesn't want certain individuals compromised, they could go to court and say, we need more time than that. We can't do it in 30 days. But I agree with you. I think more and more we're going to see this.
Joe Tamburino's a criminal defense attorney, legal analyst here, talking about new developments in the death of Tyree Nichols. Joe, in many of these cases now, mayors, police chiefs are quick to come out unequivocally denouncing what the officers did. Now, it doesn't take a genius to look at this video and say, okay, like, yes, I'm going to denounce what the officers did. But I wonder what that means in the legal process, because this is how it's going to go now. If you're a mayor, if you're a chief, you're expected to come out forcefully. Does this end up when you end up, you know, these things go to court. These officers will have a trial. What do you make of this move to quickly denounce the officers?
It's problematic. I mean, I understand why it happens. And I think in this case, you know, when we see these officers and they're all beating on Mr. Nichols, it's not going to, I don't think, cause a great problem. But there could very well be other cases where it's going to be very difficult to get a fair and impartial jury for, say, officers who were there at the scene but didn't quite know everything that was going on. You know, like even going back to the Chauvin case. I mean, let's remember, Mr. Tao never touched George Floyd. He wasn't part of the physical fight of restraining Mr. Floyd. He was keeping people away. So in a situation like that, the officer could very well think to himself, how am I going to get a fair trial when the mayor of whatever city is saying I'm guilty when I never even touched the suspect? I didn't know what was going on. So it's those individuals who are, yes, part of the whole scene, but didn't actually use any physical force. They are going to have problems trying to get a fair and impartial jury.
No one feels sorry for these officers in Memphis, but it's an interesting reality of how this goes moving forward.
Right.
Joe Tamburino, thank you for the insight as always.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
550 Traffic and Weather together next on CCO. Good stuff on the podcast. Go back and check out our interview with Rocco Baldelli. Just great time with some Twins players earlier today. Louis Varland, that was great too. St. Paul's own. Getting ready for the season. Only 18 days till pitchers report, I think. 19 days, something like that. Good stuff. Henry Lake is going to lead us up to Timberwolves pregame. That's next on CCO.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.